everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you on this Friday, Valentine's Day 2025. February 14th is here, and Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Tom, today, not only Valentine's Day, but Arizona's the Valentine State, 113th anniversary of Arizona being admitted to the Union. Do you want to take a guess, Tom, that who was the president that made it official?
Who was the president? What year?
It would have been 1913. Wait a minute, 1914. 14. It's President Taft signed Arizona, making it official that Arizona became, wait a minute, were we the, Jan Lusher with me, New Mexico was after us?
I thought we were the 49th.
I thought we were 48th.
Oh, 48th.
And then we had Alaska and Hawaii.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry. Well, I'm thinking,
that
yeah.
sounds
Alaska
about
and Hawaii
right.
after
Jim,
us. But.
Jim Nintzel to That's the right. rescue here, the Buckmaster Show. Broadcasting from central Tucson in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, part of the Bustos Media Center, where we have five radio stations now under one roof. They're all doing very well. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice. We began our 15th year, Jan Lusher, wow. with our radio show in January, and my 37th, Jim Nintzel, in Tucson Radio and TV.
Congratulations.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Been a good ride, and we're still rolling.
Yeah. You are an institution.
That is true.
Something like that. We have our worldwide live listening podcast available for you at buckmastershow.com and the Buckmaster Show live line, 790-2040. Folks are always welcome to call the program. That is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, our media partners. Jim Nintzel's organization, where Jim is the political, senior political reporter for TucsonSentinel.com, and we appreciate the support, Jim.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a junior political reporter, but...
Are you the...
the political
okay. You are the political specialist. Dan Scheer and his team at Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, they've been big supporters, and Caitlin Schmidt is now supporting us as well. Prominently displaying the Buckmaster Show logo on her new online venture, which is called Tucson Spotlight. Jan Lusher is here, Pima County Administrator. Jan, how are you?
I am doing fine, other than the fact I said we were the 49th state. So
well,
I don't know if you'd listen to much else I'll say today. You're right. There's all that. But I'm doing fine. Thank
good.
You.
And congratulations, because since we last had you on the program, you have inked a new contract as the Pima County Supervisor. Not a long-term deal, and that's your choice, I guess, because how could retirement, Jan Lusher, actually be on the horizon for
well,
you?
Well,
I mean,
I hope.
Kind of young to retire.
Well, I think, no, I'm not, but thank you for saying that. I think what we've talked about, and it's how I think it's important, and Bill, we've talked about it, that the county administrator's contract get, if you will, off cycle. That the way it's always been is that every 4 years, the board meets, they get sworn in, they elect officers, and they renew the contract for four years.
Right.
I don't think it gives the board a real, you know, any kind of runway to talk about what they want, what they're looking for, what their goals are. So my hope is if we get it into a two-year cycle, that really allows folks to on the board to decide what it is they're looking for and take some time and hire that next county administrator.
All right, here's Jim Nintzel.
A lot of confusion across the country, really, when we saw the freezing of federal grants and federal funding that was later reversed. But talk a little bit about how these federal funds come to us and what the impact of this would be. Because it's not, if you win a grant, you don't get a check from the federal government. It's a reimbursement cycle, which I don't know that many people understand. Mm-hmm. That cutting it off in the middle of a grant cycle means there are things that may be underway that
That's
aren't
right.
going to you won't be able to pay the bills.
That's right. And what we're looking at, Jim, when we got the news like everybody else about the executive orders, we started looking at all of those orders, starting a crosswalk with all of our county programs. We believe now it's about $148 million in current grants that may be in question. And as you describe it, what we're looking at is what are the buckets, if you will. What are things we've already done or things we've already purchased, if it's air quality equipment or concrete for roads or something? What have we done for which we're waiting for reimbursement? And that's one end. And then there's sort of the other end where there's grants that we have received or they have been awarded to us, but we've not started the work yet. We just heard this week a grant we got for just about $2 million for safe streets for part of our roads out of the Federal Highway Administration, and that's on hold right now. We don't know where that's going. And then there's a bunch in the middle that we're sort of a little bit in and out, and we are evaluating every day the status of each of those grants and what it means and where are we with the reimbursements. And what I don't know yet and we're evaluating is what's the full exposure to the county right now in terms of the $148 million?
Yeah.
What have we already spent? And then we heard the other night as an example, everything these days are electronic transfers where the government just transfers the funds to us. And I believe it's New York City where the federal government clawed back about $81 million without real notification, just said, well, you've not spent this, you've not done it correctly, so we gave it, and now we're taking it away. So we're looking at what all those different, what the impact is.
This could be like a budget buster, maybe not a big-time buster, but it's certainly going to play into the role of when you go to look at your financials for the upcoming fiscal year.
You know, it is, and I was at a panel last Saturday and with a friend from the city, and they were indicating that, well, that they may have about $400 million of grants on the line. And then those are federal grants. That next tier are the grants that we get from the state, as an example, but those come from the federal government. And when we talk about grants, I also try to split it a bit in that I think of there's a grant as in you go out, you apply for a grant, you get a couple million dollars to do something. Then there are things that we almost don't think of as annual grants anymore. And by that, it's like community development block grants. Those have been dollars coming in by a formula from the federal government to the county for decades. And there are programs like that, but we don't know the full extent of whether they're on that same list to be evaluated as any other one-time grant.
Mm. Let's go to the live line caller, Matt, calling us at 790-2040, our Rincon Ventures real estate and property management live line. Hey, Matt, you're with Jan.
First, happy Valentine's Day to you and to your listeners and to the everybody there. Real quickly, Jan, Rex Scott came in and to the show and I guess he had a good discussion about being the new chair, and part of it was, the responsibilities and how much the workload, getting adjusted and so forth. Recently your staff has changed with the Dr. Garcia transitioning to the University of Arizona, and I gather that you have been working with the staff you already have rather than seeking new people. And by the way, congratulations on appointing Steve to Pima, Animal Control Center.
Steve Kasachek.
Any thoughts on your staff, on your workload? How's it going? And all these changes now. Thank you. Bye.
Yep, you bet. Thanks, Matt, and happy Valentine's Day to you. We have two deputy county administrators now, and many folk in the community have worked with Carmine DeBonis Jr. He does works with many of our public works departments, been with the county, I think, 34 years now, came to us as an intern out of college. And the other deputy is Steve Holmes, been with us a few years, but many people knew Steve, came to us from being the superintendent of the Sunnyside School District. So the three of us spent some time when we knew that Dr. Garcia was headed to the U of A and decided that for right now, as we're building budgets, we're looking at budgets, we knew there was going to be a new administration. We wondered about grants. We felt we'll just divvy up the work that the departments that were reporting to Dr. Garcia, spend some time with the three of us seeing how that shakes down, and then making some decisions. And that we've also, as people know, my predecessor was with the county for 40-plus years, county administrator for 29. A lot of people came in around that same time, and we're seeing changes. We've just got a new finance director. We're about to bring in their new procurement director, our development services director, Carla Blackwell, who's been with us for a long time.
These are your hires.
These are new hires coming in. Okay. Yep. And Carla's retiring. We're looking for that individual. Mm. So a lot of changes going on. Mm. And we felt, let's just sort of keep things where they are for right now. Obviously, as we mentioned, Steve Kozacek out at PAC. Divvy the workload up. Let's see what's happening at the federal government. Let's see what it means to our budget as we look at the next year. And then we'll make decisions about adding staff after that.
And Steve says, by the way, it's his dream job. And Steve, he loves it. He's going to be on our Friday Focus interview next Friday. We'll talk with Steve. Jim, go ahead. What do you got?
Steve first came to you to work on the Mosaic Quarter project, major sports facility out at near Keno Park. Right. What's the status of that operation?
Well, Steve came to us at the perfect time, and I think the Mosaic Quarter development that is well underway and moving forward and incredibly exciting, but is sort of complicated, and it had about 16 different contracts and sub-agreements, and Steve, working with Carmine, really rolled up their sleeves and got all of that figured out. And we had a groundbreaking at the end of last year. It is changing a whole part of our community, I think. For people, Jim, who know that section of the community, there was not a lot of new economic opportunity. There was not a lot of investment. So now we have a facility going in that's not only going to be extraordinary sports complex for all of us who spent time driving to Phoenix with kids in soccer. We'll have all of that. The U of A will be there, opening up many new opportunities and have restaurants, motels, all of that that goes with it. So really turning that part of the town into what was not as fruitful in the past as really being an economic engine. And they are on track. There's a lot to do there. I think the sheets of ice and some of the work with the University of Arizona ice hockey may be some of the first that you see opening up. But if you've been down to that neck of the woods in a while, I encourage you to go.
And again, for our listeners, that is where?
Thank you. I'm sorry, Bill. It's down by our Keno Sports Complex, which is pretty much the freeway and about Ajo.
And there's room there for this particular project.
Just south of the freeway there. If people think of the old baseball park, kind of the north side. This is that south side. Mm. But if you look at that area in the middle, just before the pandemic, we opened up 16 pickleball courts in addition to the ballpark, some soccer fields, and now all of this. So drive by. Mm-hmm. Soon.
Rex Scott was on the show on Wednesday, I believe, and Matt was referencing that interview. And one of the things he pointed out is he's concerned there are some reports on the loop of some homeless folks, unsheltered people, who are apparently getting a little aggressive with some of the patrons of the loop.
Well, and I really, when we see some of the activity on the loop, what it appears to me is making sure that I'm separating. There are individuals who are homeless, and we're working with them to find a space. There are people who just flat out are conducting criminal activity out there, and that's a different kettle of fish for us. And we have, we've spent now, I think we're in our fourth month with VetSec. We have a private security firm that goes out and monitors some of the key areas. We get nightly reports, and we're going to be reporting back to the board the first meeting in March what the day-to-day activity is looking like out there. And the struggles that we have, and then all of the businesses that are adjacent to the loop have, when we've got that kind of difficult activity in some of the key points. And the loop is to be, it's a wonderful recreation facility for bikes and people walking and running and everything. And it needs to be maintained for that. And we need to get people who are using it to buy or sell drugs off of that path.
It needs to be a safe space.
It needs to be
sure,
a safe space.
Right?
Absolutely.
Jim.
And that, brings us to some intertwined issues within the community that the city is trying to address with Prop 414, which ballots went out this week. But I think you've got your homeless issues, and the homelessness has increased, 67% between 2020 and 2023, according to your point in time counts. You've got also an opioid crisis that's going on in the community, and the two of them entwine but are not necessarily 100% the same thing. Number one, can you talk a little bit about homelessness?
Sure, and that we have an office that we established a couple of years ago, really to look at that and try to figure out what opportunities are, what homeless solutions are. We've developed, the Board of Supervisors has been allocating funds each year for gap housing. We use, it's a $5 million that goes out in RFP to local home builders, and people come in and help us build affordable housing, build housing so that those who are homeless can get off, can find a place to live. We have teams that go out and find some of those encampments, work very hard to get people either into programs. Some need some mental health or substance abuse assistance. And we work with each of those folks individually with mm-hmm. teams that go into the facilities. But as I say, that's a little bit different. And the city, and of course, I'm sorry.
Let me just jump in there. How much of that funding that you're using in there is federal funding?
So far, that's out of the general fund. But,
okay.
But it's always the concern, you know, you move some of the general fund that comes out from other buckets has to be filled in by general fund, and these programs can end because I think anything that is not mandated legally is always up to be eliminated. But the city has been really the lead in a lot of those homeless activities because, as you mentioned, the point in time count, the numbers are going up, unfortunately. A lot of that is within the city limits of the city of Tucson. Then the other side of it is what we're doing to really look at the opioid crisis that we have in this community, the fentanyl. When fentanyl is less than a dollar, for a pill and things, it's just been extraordinary to see how it's devastating so much of the community. And for us, it's getting all the players together, because what I hear every day is, well, it doesn't, TPD's not arresting anybody. Well, then I hear, some of our folks in law enforcement say, well, why do we bother? Because nobody's prosecuting him. Or they bring him to the jail and they won't accept him. And so everybody's figuring out a way to point a little bit at somebody else right now. And we're trying to figure out, how do we get everyone at the table? Because it is a little bit of everybody. It's land use and zoning. It's mental health and behavioral health. It is law enforcement. It is prosecution. It is our jail system. How do we get everyone at the table together so that we stop pointing some of those fingers but deal with that problem?
The homeless stamp is on really everything.
And I think for all of us, Bill and Jim, we've all been around this town a long time.
Yeah.
And there used to be a time when you knew little pockets of the community where you would see some homeless folks living. And now it feels like wherever you go in town, whenever you're driving around, you're going to see folk who are homeless. And what is it we need to be doing with those individuals?
Jim, hold your thought there. I know you had a follow-up, but we need to take a break. It's Buckmaster on a Friday, our Friday Focus interview. Jan Lusher is here, Pima County's administrator, and Jim Nintzel is my guest co-media host. We'll be right back after break number one.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, where their demolition sale is continuing. Three of the buildings over there at Green Things in Zocalo Village are in a floodplain, and Pima County has said they've got to go. So Jan and Jack, the owners, said, well, why move all the merchandise over to the new building? Let's just drastically reduce it. 50% off, up to 50% off at Zocalo Village. And they've got some beautiful, like, dining room sets made out of mesquite and some great woods and things. Anyway, that's going on over at Zocalo Village. Also a good time to replenish. I don't know about you, but my garden took a big hit in January. It was cold, so it was a good time to do some replenishing of some beautiful things for the garden over at Green Things. Jim Nensel is here, political specialist, political reporter for TucsonSentinel.com, Jan Lesher, Pima County Administrator, with us. Talk a little bit about, Jan, if you will. Fireworks are almost like a third rail for people. Some people just get so passionate. Don't mess around with our fireworks. But the reality is, we just had our climate guy, Zach Guido from the UA on yesterday, U of A, talking about right now, Jan, this is the third driest since October to present day. I think we've had less than a half an inch, third driest that particular winter period since they've been keeping records back to 1895. I don't know. But it's going to be interesting as we get closer to the 4th of July. But now fireworks are being used at sales events.
Well, and that's, I think, part of what our board has started to look at is there are fireworks that are for conventions, and it's a fairly regular phenomenon at some locations. Mm-hmm. And I think what the board's going to start looking at is sort of time and place. We have locations where at the 4th of July out in Ajo, they have a fireworks celebration where there's, in an area of the community where there's nothing to burn. Mm-hmm. But it's hard for us right now in that we're spending a lot of time talking about wildfires and invasives, et cetera. And when you look at the Tumamoc area, A Mountain, where we've got buffalo grass concerns coming right into an interface with the urban core, and that happens to be where we have one of our big fireworks displays, you know, every 4th of July. So I think what you're going to see is people start evaluating when can fireworks take place, and is there any sort of barometer we need to evaluate about if we're in the middle of a drought? Has there been rain recently? You know, what does that look like?
And the drone shows are being communities across the country are now doing them.
Many are. We're starting to see, and I think because we always have issues with our animals. I think people with dogs know that fireworks are not a swell thing.
And cats.
I had people people come see me last year who ended up having to put a horse down because of injuries sustained after concerns related to the fireworks. So how we balance, you know, people being able to enjoy that celebration, particularly at the 4th of July and a couple of times a year, versus not setting our community on fire at the same time. And how do we balance those?
Jim Nensel.
Yeah, we roads. Big issue across the community, and the county's actually gotten quite a bit work done through its road pavement and preservation program.
Sure have. And I think that not that many years ago, I think the number one issue, the thing we heard the most about, was our roads. Supervisor Christie is always, you came to our board with a just to fix the roads, and has kept us really focused on that issue as we make sure we do that. We had front-loaded some internal funding capacity and spent about $150 million over a few years to really focus on our roads. There is something called a pavement condition index, a PCI. We have a goal to make sure that we have the majority of our roads, or all of our roads, within a PCI of very good or better. And we were on target. Our goal was to hit that by 2030. Looks like we're going to get that done by about 2028 at the latest. So we're seeing real progress in maintaining the roads. I think our challenge is going to be to make sure we don't slip back. That sometimes when money goes into fixing one thing, people do like to pivot and say, well, the roads are taken care of, now let's go do something else. And we got into trouble with the roads because we'd not spent the time fixing them. We have, there's people can go to our website, find out the conditions of their roads. There's an opportunity to just go on the website if they think they have potholes in their areas. And let us fix them. But I'm sorry.
But these are the existing roads, the residential roads, yeah. The arterials, all that. But you don't have money for major capacity increases on roads. Yeah. I think you have one coming up on the south side later this year. But I think it's Valencia
doing
out there. Mm-hmm. On the west side. But how important is the RTA, which is expiring next spring, in terms of providing the county with money to do some of those major expansions that are leading to congestion?
Well, $2.8 billion is what we estimate the RTA next would mean to this community over 20 years. It is significant. And it is a program, at least, that has been out getting public comment, getting feedback from the community, that includes transit in, the core of Tucson, as well as some interchanges on I-10, and major expansion of some of the key roads out in, as you mentioned, the Valencia Road. We have work slated on Silverbell. There's additional capacity on Orange Grove, First Avenue, headed north. Some of the roads that more and more people are using, this will have an opportunity to expand and enhance and to provide other services. You're seeing now more and more communities making sure that when they're building those roads, there's bike paths, there's bike lanes, something for everyone there. It's a concern to the county. I think if we were to really just go back and look at the projects that are before the public right now that are strictly in unincorporated Pima County, it's the equivalent of about $25 million a year in projects for Pima County. But as I point out, every project that's on RTA Next is actually in the county, whether it's in an incorporated jurisdiction or not.
So. And then Interstate 11, the proposed I-11, sounds like it is on ice.
Sounds like that got held up. Yep. That there's until the environmental assessments and other things occur, we're not going to see any expansion of that at this point.
And the Board of Supervisors on record opposing that. And
yes, they are.
It was basically an additional highway west of Tucson.
Correct.
Getting back to the wildfire risk, Supervisor Christie joined forces with Supervisor Dr. Matt Hines, both of them on the same page about we really do need a mitigation plan for wildfires with the drought accentuating and what we saw in Los Angeles. And I know that your team is working on a draft plan to see really what resources do we have in Pima County to fight wildfires.
And we have had a wildfire mitigation plan. It's out of date, so we're reviewing all of that now. We have this next board meeting, we have representatives of a variety of fire districts coming to the board to talk about whether or not we need to look at creation of a broader fire district in this community. I think 2022, I believe there was a ballot initiative statewide that would have funded some of the smaller fire districts. It was not successful, but what we look at as an example here, the fire district that supports Mount Lemmon, mm-hmm. many, many people in this community utilize Mount Lemmon and mm-hmm. and appreciate that there's not a fire there. But the reality is it's only the property tax base in that area that supports that fire district. So they have received funding from Pima County to offset that, recognizing that so many other folks use it. The idea is, can we look at a fire district or some opportunity to fund a bucket that would allow for those smaller, the volunteer fire districts, the something like a Mount Lemmon that does not have that mm-hmm. tax base, to be able to benefit from the entire, from additional funds. Supervisor Christie has been pushing for us to look at other ways we mitigate, and particularly looking at the insurance opportunities. Mm-hmm. And that's where he and all of the board have come mm-hmm. together to say, what is it we need to do to make sure that insurance is available and that folk have an opportunity to purchase?
Yeah, good luck trying to get insurance in Los Angeles County with a traditional carrier right now for fire insurance. We had a listener who wanted you to comment on the library system. The listener points out the Richard Elias Mission Library was supposed to reopen soon. It's been delayed perhaps a year or so. How are we doing overall with the whole library situation? There was talk about closing some libraries. What's the big picture on Pima County Libraries, which is a wonderful resource for our community?
It is, Bill, and I think so many people use our libraries, but many people use them differently, I think, in some ways than they used to. We mm-hmm. don't see people in the same numbers going into a library and checking out a book, a hard, a paper book. Mm-hmm. We do see people checking out books. We see them doing audiobooks. We see them accessing all sorts of electronic documents. We see them using the libraries as neighborhood centers. So there's a lot of reasons to support our libraries. I think what became a real issue for a while was our downtown library. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you.
Is it on city land? Or
it is. It's several years ago, decades ago. There was a city library department and a county, and they merged.
Okay.
And so there's one, but that is one of those old buildings owned mm-hmm. by the city, operated by the county. Mm-hmm. There will always be a library in downtown Tucson. I absolutely believe that, and I think both the board and the council agree with that. When I was growing up, the downtown library was the Carnegie Library that's now the Children's Museum. So mm-hmm. I say that because while there's always a library, sometimes it looks different. What the Valdez Library, as an example, is in the need of about $90 million of deferred maintenance. So what we're looking at now is what's the highest and best use? Do we renovate that building? Do we move out temporarily and let it become renovated? Do we do parts of it? What all is involved? But making sure that we maintain those library services.
Or use it as a joint use facility. Right?
See, exactly what can we do? It's about 90,000 square feet.
And that's a huge...
Our largest library is about 45,000. So
yeah.
there's some extra space.
All right, Jim Nitzel.
There's a bill up at the Arizona legislature that would prohibit the use of election centers, which is something the county shifted to recently, where you have over 100 polling locations across the community on election day that people can go to no matter where they live, rather than having to go to their specific precinct, because you can print ballots on demand. Technology has come along that has allowed you to shift to this, and legislation as well. And now there's an effort to reverse that. And that'd become a pretty significant challenge to Pima County, Maricopa County, as well, I think, in terms of being able to find those locations and staff them.
Well, and I think that's the great challenge, Jim. I think back in the day, I remember when we had 400 and some odd precincts. That got smaller. But we have a challenge now is that many of the locations that we counted on as polling places, schools, churches, elections have become a little more difficult, can be contentious. Many of those locations don't want to be polling places anymore. So finding polling places has become difficult. But as you've said, when we began to look at vote centers, and we were one of the last counties in the state to go to vote centers, it's that opportunity, recognizing that people, they don't necessarily live and work in the same part of the community. And the ability to go to any vote center and cast a ballot is what we believe has been widely adopted or accepted and enjoyed by people in this community. More and more people are voting early, and so then, but we have had the majority of the people from whom we've heard support vote centers, support that idea for flexibility. But you're right. If the law were to change, we go back to a whole different kind of technology, and we go back to finding all sorts of new locations and the staff.
Jim, did you have anything else?
You mentioned the challenge with wildfires, and I think even you mentioned buffalo grass earlier in our conversation, and invasive species are a real problem in the community.
They absolutely are, and again, as someone who lives at A Mountain, I see that buffalo grass. We think back about 10 years ago, we had a federal grant and to look at the buffalo grass and the wildlife, that interface as it was heading towards critical infrastructure. A lot of money went into making sure that the buffalo grass was eradicated around the airport. It is that critical infrastructure. And I think for people who, we really caught my attention after Lahaina, and I thought, what are we doing and how quickly communities can go? And then you look at the LA area and realize that the population impacted in LA is more than the population in the state of Arizona. So hard to recognize or get your mind around the fact that everybody in this entire state could be impacted. And as we see the drought, we see the heat, and we see the community expanding and more structures built farther and farther out into those communities, what is it we need to do to make sure that we are mitigating against that threat of wildfire? And there's a lot going on, and those are the issues we'll be coming to the board.
You keep pulling the buffalo grass out, and it keeps growing back,
right? Everybody's out around their house in my neck of the woods.
If I can work one more in. Yep. What about these unlicensed food vendors? People, when they go to a vendor, Jim and Jan, you don't want to get sick.
No, and we've been shutting them down, I'll tell you. And we went as far here to confiscate some equipment.
Did you really?
We did. And say that because it was difficult on our folks there. But you can't, you're right. I think people have an expectation. And even if they're going to a food truck or a restaurant, we assume that someone has been inspected and that there's a safety issue. We just came out of a pandemic. We need to support our local restaurants and businesses. Mm-hmm. And then to have someone to come in from Phoenix area and just put some trucks up and open up the gates and not only not be up to health code, but taking the business away from our local community.
Mm-hmm. Hey, speaking of the pandemic, is the county still distributing COVID tests?
Yes.
At libraries and the Abrams Health Center?
Jim, I know it's at Abrams. I don't know if they're, honest to gosh, don't know if we're still doing them through the libraries, but I'll let you know. I'll get back to you on that one. Sorry.
Okay, Jan Lesher, you're already probably starting to look at the fiscal year budget, aren't you, in February here? And that's going to be a real challenge for you and your team. That you mentioned the two individuals who work with you, the three of you, trying to figure out, it's going to be any federal money?
Well, and we start in January. We start meeting weekly in January to build a budget. And we're actually going to the board on the 18th to talk through. Departments submit what we call supplementals. Everybody gets what they got last year, and anything they want that's more than last year comes in as a supplemental request. So the board's going to start to see what that looks like. If we take all of last year's expenditures and what we believe to be next year's revenues, we're upside down already before we add one more person, and that's with the federal dollars. So, and even if the federal government hadn't changed, we are at the end of the federal money that came in for the pandemic. For us, it was about $350 million. So we're calling it the post-pandemic recovery plan to make sure that we are moving all the programs that might have started with those dollars, either ending them or finding out how we fund them.
We have such smart listeners. Yes, COVID tests are available
at the Pima County Library.
Is that from a listener?
I appreciate
all right.
that.
Jan Lesher, thanks. Hope you have a great Valentine's
Day. Thank you to all of you.
Thanks. Jim Ninsel, stick around. Have a couple of minutes with you, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Thanks to our friend Jan Lusher, Jim Nintzel with me from TucsonSentinel.com. And both of us have known Jan for a very long time and think she's doing a very good job at Pima County. Jim, we've got city elections coming up, the three wards, right? We've got candidates. Who's up and who's down and where are we at?
Oh, yeah, that's still in the preliminary. It's not the soonest election because ballots went out this week for 414.
Everybody's focusing on 414. Maybe I should have started with that, but yeah, let's start with the election.
City elections. You have two open seats, which is rare in Tucson. You don't see that happen very
Richard
often. Richard
Fimbres
is retiring over in Ward 4, or 5, excuse mm-hmm. me, and four candidates have filed statements of interest, which is a step before. Or a statement of organization where you're really raising money and getting it together.
Anybody could say I'm interested basically at this point, right?
Right, so you have Selena Barajas, a newcomer to the political scene who came out with the endorsements of Mayor Romero, Congressman Grijalva, several members of the Board of Supervisors, seems to have a pretty solid campaign out the gate. You have Jesse Lugo, who's been around in politics for a long time, former gas station owner, business lobbyist, mm-hmm. and he has ran for that office before in 2001. You have newcomer Christopher Elsner, who, again, hasn't really doesn't have a lot of political profile. And then you have a fellow, Richard Hernandez, who tried to run for the PCC school board last year, and it didn't. He actually withdrew after filing his petitions, but he has also run for the Pima County Board of Supervisors.
Kevin Dahl, right now, not really much to worry about.
No, over in Ward 3, a Democrat has filed a statement of interest, but we don't know who she is.
And then quickly in the other ward?
Ward 6, really crowded. Five candidates on the Democratic side, including Miranda Schubert, who ran for this last time. You have, I'm trying to remember them all, Jim Sinex, a retired science teacher from Tucson High. You have Charlie Verdon, who's run for the legislature before.
Some of these names are familiar. These are people who have run before.
Yeah, he's running a company called Fan Gamer. You have an attorney, Leighton Rockefeller Jr., who is stepping up. And there's one more. Boy,
Don't worry about it right now, escaping me.
But Bruce Wheeler was thinking about it, but he decided against it.
Closer time-wise, certainly, is 414.
Yes, 414. That's the half-cent sales tax that the city's going out. They've had a lot of luck persuading voters to support them on previous sales tax
and
bonds.
Pretty much three have been successful, three in a row.
Yeah, three or four maybe, because there was
maybe
that
four.
Zoo tax in there,
But
too.
Then there was that power line thing, TEP,
yes.
And that was defeated, so who knows?
Who knows? This money would be going about two-thirds of it into public safety and the remainder into support for the homeless, support for folks who are dealing with opioid addictions, but also early childhood education scholarships and affordable housing efforts and things of that nature. So a whole bunch of different things. But I talked to the police chief this last week about the whole thing, and he says the reason we've got these other things in there is I can't arrest my way out of the homeless problem and the opioid problem. So it's important to try to find ways to alleviate those pressures on the community that don't involve law enforcement. But he's certainly someone who says this would make a great deal of difference to the work that he does. Opposing it is a lot of members of the business community have come out in opposition of this, saying that they support all the things that are in it. They like the package itself, but they say that the sales tax is just a bad mechanism for raising the money.
Yeah, and they say that why didn't the city just budget this into the general fund?
Right, but the city, the general fund is only about $750 million, and two-thirds of that is already going to public safety when you look at the courts, the fire department, and the police department. So that gives you about a third of the budget to try to squeeze to find more money for those services. And, that's stuff about parks and roads and other things that are really important to what the city does. So.
All right, Jim Nintzel, we'll look for your work at TucsonSentinel.com, and that is a free service, actually, but people do need to donate to keep it going. I mean, it's free when I say you can. There's no paywall or anything like that.
There's no paywall. We are very grateful to the support of the community and other folks who give us grants and help us, continue to produce the amazing award-winning journalism that my colleagues come up with every single day. We're reporting on this community, and I got to say, the folks that I work with are incredibly hardworking and incredibly talented, and I feel very fortunate to be
part of
the team.
Great to see you. Thank you, Jim Nintzel. All right, take a break. The Valentine's edition of Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive. Ken Carr is going to be here right after this break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat.
Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
It is time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive, depending on where you're heading, from Tucson East over to Silver City in Grant County, makes a great weekend getaway. Start your planning now for an enchanting getaway in the land of enchantment by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. A ton of stuff to do, a lot of great outdoor activities, and some good eating as well in historic downtown Silver City. Ken Carr is here, the very popular midday host at 101.7 The Drive, and he's got some very loving Valentine's Day suggestions for Weekend Watch. Hey, Ken.
Happy Valentine's Day.
I'm ready, man. I am ready.
I love to be here. See what I did there?
Yeah. Oh, you love it.
Yeah, that's
we
right.
We love having you.
Oh, okay. Oh, gee.
Oh, my.
All right, let's get started. Tucson Gem, Mineral, and Fossil Showcase last weekend. Now, this is really kind of the big part of the
granddaddy of them.
Because the Tucson Convention Center
is
now
full.
Of course,
this is the big show. 70th anniversary, I think.
And it's, if you've never been, this is one of those things, in you live in Tucson, you have missed out. It's just so much to see. Mm-hmm. And there's just some beautiful rocks and gems and et cetera, and fossils. So make sure you check that out this weekend at all of the locations around town. How about a fun evening of magic? We'll make that appear.
Ooh, I love magic shows. Where's that happening?
It's today, tomorrow, at the Scottish Rite Cathedral downtown on
cool.
Scott. And Carnival of Illusion Theater is featuring special guest performers John and Marilyn Schrock. I've seen them perform before, and they are fantastic, the illusions that they do. Mm. And it's kind of set up in an intimate boutique setting.
Ooh, sounds interesting.
So carnivalofillusion.com if you want the website for that for tickets.
That's downtown?
Yep, on Scott, 160 South Scott.
Cool. Okay.
USA Junior All-American Games. Some young players playing baseball this weekend.
Baseball is starting? Oh, okay.
Well, you know what? One of the things that happens at this time of year is that other teams like to travel to this area from other parts of the country.
Yeah, like Nebraska and places.
Yes,
yeah.
Because they don't like playing in the snow for some reason. And we don't seem to have that here.
No.
That's at the Keno Sports Complex. Over 100 youth baseball teams are competing, youth prep and high school divisions. So you might go watch some baseball this mm-hmm. weekend. It's a lot of fun.
I could take another one.
All right. Night of Culture. The only culture I usually get is from eating yogurt, but we can get some culture this weekend.
Cultured yogurt. Okay.
Tucson Museum of Art, downtown on 140 South Main, and it's music and dance with Latin guitar, Argentine tango dance, Afro-Brazilian music, African drumming by an all-women's drumming ensemble. You'll get some culture in your life if you go to this weekend. And one more quickie. The Lunar New Year is happening. Year of the Snake mm-hmm. at the Tucson Chinese Cultural Center downtown. Well, it's not downtown, actually. It's 1288 West River. Mm-hmm. Fun-filled day with a special program that includes the Lion Dance, Chinese performances, food and drink, another way for you to get a little bit of culture in your life.
There is no shortage of activities this weekend. And a quick plug for my presentation at 11 o'clock with Ryan Hansen, Bon Voyage Travel. Ken, the Bon Voyage Travel Show is Sunday starting at 11 o'clock at the Hilton El Conquistador. I will be there, and I hope to see a lot of our listeners.
Bon voyage!
Bon voyage. All right, the Buckmaster Show, thank you, Ken. Presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Thanks to Ken Carr and Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody a lovely Valentine's Day weekend.